I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz predicted yesterday that there could be up to 20,000 new jobs at Sparrows Point over the next decade. He's considering fitting Baltimore County police officers with body cameras, and he's involved in a finger-pointing spat now with Governor Larry Hogan and State Controller Peter Franchot over a lack of air conditioning in county schools. Today in our studio, we'll discuss all that and more with Kevin Kamenetz and with Baltimore County Police Chief Jim Johnson. In addition, we'll hear the latest in plans for massive redevelopment in Towson, growing social and economic disparities in the Baltimore metropolitan region, and a plan B for the next red line. Kevin Kamenetz on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here again. Thanks so much for joining us. Today is Constitution Day, the day set aside to commemorate the anniversary of the U.S. Constitution being signed by delegates to the Constitutional Convention way back in 1787. That was on September 17th, 1787. And today on the show, in the second hour today, we're going to be sort of observing Constitution Day with a look at the Freddie Gray case, police and the Constitution, with two law professors who will be joining us, one from the University of Pittsburgh and one from the University of Baltimore. That's coming up in the second hour of our show today. University of Baltimore having commemorations, panel discussions tonight about the U.S. Constitution and the Freddie Gray case and Baltimore. So we get a little piece of that today when two of the professors who are taking part in those discussions join us. In this hour of the show, we welcome Kevin Kamenetz back to Midday, Baltimore County Executive. Nice to see you again, Executive.
Good afternoon. Good to be here, Dan.
And this time you brought your police chief with you,
was a little nervous about being in the same room with you. Thought I'd bring some protection.
So you brought him this time. And Chief Johnson visited with us here in Midday about a month or so ago. It's nice to see you again, Chief.
Delighted to be here.
Well, we'll go right to it. I'll ask the question. You have some news to report today, Kevin Kamenetz.
Are you asking me whether I have any news to report?
Yes, because I learned from last time to always ask, do you have some news to report? County Executive, are you announcing anything new that's newsworthy?
Well, actually, I will be announcing at 2 o'clock this afternoon an event, but since you have asked me this specific question, I will let you know and your listeners know ahead of time that at 2 o'clock we will be announcing a program to implement body cameras for all of our Baltimore County police officers.
This is something that's been under discussion since last year. I think you were on the show in December last year and said you were going to have a panel look into this.
I did. Last December, I asked the chief to put together a task force of not only police officers but other interested parties throughout the community to examine the parameters of it. By way of history, we had made a decision last December to implement cameras on taser weapons. And I think we had talked about that before. Our concern was that the tasers not only have cameras, but that they have microphones on it. And we realized we probably are going to have some Maryland wiretap issue conflicts that needed to be resolved by the General Assembly. I want you, just as an aside, think about a taser. A taser is a police officer's weapon of last resort before using a firearm. And generally, the types of people are those who are extremely high on drugs, totally agitated, unreasonably ignoring police commands. So an officer will discharge a taser to tell that person to desist, drop a weapon, whatever else they're doing that they otherwise didn't obey the lawful order of a police officer. But we wanted to show people those circumstances, and we thought the camera on the taser was great because it automatically operates as soon as the police officer pulls it out of the case and then turns off when the officer returns it to the case. We went to the General Assembly and asked them to authorize an exception to the Maryland Wiretap Act to allow oral communication on a police-related camera. And, of course, there were other bills that dealt with authorizing body cameras for police officers. It was a very healthy debate in Annapolis. Annapolis did pass our version of a bill But at the same time, they also asked for a study during the summer and about general use of body cameras. And part of the problem was that the General Assembly started micromanaging in their debate, considering micromanaging every little detail of when an officer turns it on, when an officer turns it off, you know, and the implications for a jurisdiction, a county or a municipality is the cost associated with it. And when you say the word cost, we think, well, how much does a camera cost? That's nothing compared to the informational retrieval aspect of cameras. So technology is pretty cheap today. We can equip people with cameras and afford it within our budget. The problem is, what do you do with the public information request for the data? So we not only have to store it, and you store it on a cloud, but you have to then retrieve it upon request. Not only defendants, or victims want to see it, but the public just in general may, news reporters.
So you have to make provisions for that. Well, let me ask, before
expensive.
We go any further here, since you made this announcement today, I need to ask why. Why body cameras in Baltimore County on police officers? I don't want to assume that people understand.
Before you ask the chief that part, because the chief can give you some technical aspects from a policing point of view. I think my perspective is one of a larger issue in terms of trust. I think a lot of the unrest last April culminated from years of distrust between the police and the community that they serve. I think Baltimore County does a very good job with community relations, but we can always improve upon that. And I think we recognize that all across the country that I hate using the word transparent because it's the word of the year, but the idea of being accountable for one's actions, having confidence in the decision making of a police officer and having that have some independent evidence of showing what occurred as opposed to he said, she said, I think outweighs all the other negative aspects in terms of the cost for retrieval, the difficulties in terms of the standard operating procedures of when police officers would use it or would not use it, some of the crimp on investigatory aspects that a camera may inhibit people from cooperating with police, just not that they're going to be arrested, but just giving information that could lead to solving crimes. So from a policy point of view as county executive, I've made the decision with Chief Johnson to implement full body cameras. And I'll be happy to let the chief kind of get into some of the nuts and bolts of that.
Well, public safety across the nation has studied the issue now for well over a year and a half. We've been very fortunate to sit on major city chiefs that are looking at this particular tool. And we believe this tool will offer transparency and certainly provide case enhancement when the case moves its way into the state's attorney's office and into the courtroom. And we know from experience in other cities that have studied the issue that oftentimes, even though the image is one-dimensional, not like a football game where you can study it from six different cameras at one time, it in many cases proves that the officer's actions were appropriate. Now, it also captures the citizen as well, and it's going to capture the dark side of the human experience, the suffering, the grieving, and certainly people that are in mental, emotional health states and things of that nature. So this is also on film as well. The citizen is captured as well.
What do you say to officers who may say, well, why do we need this? We have good relations with our communities now. We don't have a lot of complaints. I don't know whether you do or not. Chief, the last time you were on the show, you addressed the question of how many complaints you have, courtesy complaints, excessive force complaints you've had from citizens in the police department. It seemed like it was not an outrageous number. So some officers may say, this suggests that people don't trust us.
Well, many of our officers and certainly the agency believe that this department has very few complaints. And in fact, we do compared to national averages and other cities of the same size. But certainly this is a technology that's here to stay. You can see how it's growing by each month. And Baltimore County historically has been on the cutting edge of using technology and understanding how that tool can aid us in our efforts to reduce crime and make our society a safer place.
What do you say to that one, Kevin Kamenetz?
You know, technology is not a substitute for maintaining positive police community relations. We still need police officers who know and value the communities that they protect. And we need community members who know and trust the officers protecting them. But I just think it is an added enhancement to building relationships. I think, as the chief just said, when we have car stops, and remember, we're a mobile-based police force in Baltimore County. We're 610 square miles. 90% of the Baltimore Beltway is contained within Baltimore County. We have all major corridors throughout each of those exits, and people are constantly riding in their cars. It's not a foot patrol jurisdiction. So a lot of our stops are traffic stops, and we're a very diverse population now in Baltimore County. We are 35% non-white, and there are issues where people are concerned about what was the basis that my car is now being pulled over by a police officer. Sometimes that confrontation escalates into tension by both the police officer and the driver. So I think, quite frankly, that that camera will serve to validate, it better validate, that officer's reason for stopping a car, but also will serve to temper the response from the driver so it doesn't escalate into something more confrontational.
Did you become, on your own, more convinced of the need for these as time went on here since December? Because, you know, apparently your internal work group didn't feel that they were needed.
The work group did recommend against it. I have really run the full gamut of my internal thought process on this, thinking in the beginning that it was that absolutely we should do it. And then the more I thought about it, as my experience as a prosecutor and thinking about the role of a police officer and how they kind of need some, you know, discretion in their communications in order to do their job effectively, kind of, you know, in a quiet mode sometimes. And then I started looking at the fiscal implications. I mean, you know, just tremendous cost for retrieval. I have to respect the Public Information Act and understand, you know, I know the mayor or the police chief in Baltimore, in Washington, D.C., was trying to exempt it from that. And I don't think that flies today at all. And then I just started watching what was happening all across the country and realizing we have a really progressive, modern police department. We have to embrace the technology, but also embrace the atmosphere that is prevailing across the country and make sure we are ahead of the curve on that. And it comes down to the bottom line. We're going to implement body cameras. We're going to do it in a smart way, as cost-efficient as possible, but we're going to do it here in Baltimore County, and also in a timely basis.
Can you give us an idea how are you going to do this? What do you think the cost will be?
The first 5-year operation is going to cost us $7 million. That includes the acquisition of the cameras, maintenance of the cameras, as well as the bulk of the costs are personnel associated with the public information aspect. Obviously, there's a training aspect as well for our officers on how to utilize it. And when you have training, by the way, you have that officer off the street. Someone's got to be paid overtime to take that officer's spot. I mean, the costs just keep mounting. But that's the cost. We're going to fund it. We're going to include it in our budget. The council will have to approve a contract for the procurement. So between today and June of next year, that is the remainder of our fiscal year, we will be in the solicitation stage for the equipment, the devising stage for standard operating procedures, and we will be in the hiring stage in terms of getting personnel in place, not only to train, but to deal with the redaction issues and start training so that by July 1 of next year, we will begin initial phase of officers wearing cameras. We will use that next year of that initial phase to study the impacts and see where we can improve on performance. And then by July 1 of the following year, we will complete deployment to all police officers who are otherwise going to be within the sphere of wearing it. So think about it. An undercover officer isn't wearing a camera. Chief, I don't think you should be wearing a camera unless you think that's appropriate under your jurisdiction to do so, but I don't think that's the most effective use, that the command staff needs to be wearing a camera and the costs associated with that. But, you know, there are certain personnel where you don't, they don't need a camera because they don't have interaction with the public.
So how long do you
think... You're looking disappointed. You want to wear a camera, Chief? I don't know.
How long do you think it will take to deploy or outfit these cameras on all officers you define as needing to wear them?
Well, certainly uniformed officers throughout the agency will use this device. And frankly, when I'm involved in enforcement activity, I should wear one as well. We believe that we have a good timetable in place, a period to study the different aspects of the camera, glass-mounted, collar-mounted, chest-mounted, different styles of cameras and its capabilities. Today, there's a new app that helps in redaction, but it's not operationally tested, for example. So we need to work our way through this very, very challenging topic.
I don't want to slip past redaction, because Kevin used that word, too. When you say redaction, meaning parts of video that would be excluded from public information requests?
Okay. Think about an officer who's wearing a camera. Officer speaks to a victim of domestic violence. Do we want that on camera? No. Officer goes into a crime scene or a murder scene. Do we want that on camera? Officer wants to talk to an informant. Do we want that on camera?
On camera or released to the public?
Well, I guess
I should have said
released to the public.
Yeah.
If there is some innocent bystander in the background, does their face need to be on camera? And I say on camera meaning released to the public. Obviously, the camera captures all of these things.
The internal work group, and I've read about this, have looked at the question of when the camera's turned on, when it's turned off. I mean, do you have a recommendation on that? Do you have a report telling you what the best practice would be?
We're watching the commission report, which was released this morning, the governor's commission. And, of course, that body of work will make its way to the Maryland Correctional Training Commission.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. I forgot that we were on a time frame for that as well, from the state, right?
They have an October 1 deadline, Judge Smolkin issued the document to the committee members today.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or last night.
Thanks,
I think,
Chief. Sorry.
Now, certainly, the art, the science
Another
here.
Another scoop for you, Dan.
Yeah, thanks.
The art and science here for police management is to decide in what cases the camera must be on and what cases you need officer discretion. You don't want to strip an officer of the knowledge, training, ability, and that human interaction discretion. You know, when I was a kid, I used to race home from school to watch two shows, One Adam 12 and Dragnet. And there's a character on one of those shows, Jack Webb, the most stoic, rigid individual you'd want to meet. And we don't want that in our officers. You don't want to stop that human connection. And certainly with the county executive gave great examples where that camera should be off. What utility, what good is it me to capture the crying, pleading mother that's asking for advice and help for a drug-addicted daughter? Why do we need that? But we do know the film that we do need. And we'll design policies consistent with the commission's recommendation and the legislature's approval that stays inside the boundaries of their work.
What if in the next moment that upset mother pulls a knife on the officer because she's angry? And then that's not captured.
This is actually a helpful conversation because I think we need to get away or distinguish between the word film and redaction. I think there are many events that could be filmed or captured by the camera. The key is for us in developing our procedures as to what would be denied public access. And that is going to be part of our process in talking to the General Assembly next session. So one of the reasons we are not turning on the cameras until July 1 is because we want to have the General Assembly review of these very important issues.
Specifically, when does an officer get to turn it off or on?
Well,
right?
I think the chief agrees with me. The turning on and off should be a policy matter, a standard operating procedure, but ultimately there will be discretion involved with that police officer who will otherwise have to explain why the camera was turned off. I think the secondary aspect is discussing Maryland's Public Information Act as to the ability of a police officer not only to redact information that relates to a criminal investigation, which I think they probably would already have that ability, but also the ability to excise horrific scenes that are, you know, pure in nature, as well as situations where innocent bystanders are otherwise there and have nothing to do with the actual filming.
We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and have some more questions about this, and we'll move on to some other matters. Kevin Kamenetz is the Baltimore County Executive. He's our guest in this hour. And Jim Johnson is the Chief of Police in Baltimore County. So we're discussing the announcement they're making today regarding police body cameras and that program. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you have a question for either Chief Johnson or County Executive Kevin Kamenetz, you can also send a question by email. That's midday@wypr.org. So it's fair to say you're pushing ahead with body cameras. You're going to go to the county council and ask for money. You're going to look at different styles of cameras and purchase some and develop a system for deploying them, and then for providing those who request copies of these recorded videos a way to provide that as well. So sounds like you got a lot to work out yet, and you're looking to the General Assembly for some of this, right, Kevin Kamenetz? Some of the recommendations for how these are used will
be... I have no doubt that the General Assembly is going to continue their discussion. Mm-hmm. And part of it, that was part of the reason why they asked for this commission to be created and Governor Hogan appointed Judge Smolkin to chair. I did read the commission's report, and it was, you know, it did not have a significant amount of detail, meaning I think that commission itself understood that the General Assembly is likely to look at this. The issue for the General Assembly, again, my suggestion is not to micromanage every detail, but to allow some flexibility, most important, and within the discretion of the individual police officers. And that would be through a department that would set up written standard operating procedures. And I'm sure they will likely insist on written procedures, and we're fine with that. The real issue for me is addressing what I just said before about the authority to redact under Maryland's Public Information Act. And that's a dicey issue because they'll hear from the ACLU and newspaper groups and everyone else. But there is a balancing process there that needs to be considered, and I hope they give us that flexibility.
As far as paying for it, will the county be eligible for some federal funding?
I read that the president is offering money, and we're sure going to make a request for some of it.
Chief Johnson, a question for me. For you on this, have you looked at a specific police department anywhere in the country where the chief and the brass in that department and the citizens and the politicians in that community say, yeah, this is effective. I'm glad we have this.
I think I have many studies across the nation, work in Seattle and then locally, small agencies and many that are in the pilot stage at this moment in time. And there's an overwhelming amount of positive data coming from use of the tool itself. I feel optimistic that it'll be another tool we can use in public safety to accomplish our mission.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you have a question for Kevin Kamenetz, Baltimore County Executive, or Jim Johnson, the police chief in Baltimore County. Mark has a question. Mark's in Baltimore. Let's see if we can answer this question. Go right ahead, Mark.
Okay, thanks. Quick background. I'm a student career changer at the Baltimore County Community College's Geospatial Application Program. Great school, by the way, Baltimore County. I'm wondering, to try and put it in layman's terms, are these cameras going to be location-enabled? Basically, will we know GPS coordinates for the camera so we can understand exactly where the officer is, maybe what other cameras are in a vicinity of that camera at that time? Is that technology that's going to be available?
Officers already are GPS locatable by the police department. The camera itself will not have a GPS device on it.
Here's a question. We got a few questions here by email. We can talk about this a little bit more, and then we have a couple other issues to discuss with Kevin Kamenetz. Ben wonders, is it wise to have the police officers to be the ones deciding what footage is appropriate for the public, or does that not lead to more problems and questions? Well, going back to your answer on this, Kevin Kamenetz, there's the two different things. There's one, the recording of the activity of the police officer, and then there's a request that comes in for this video to be used as evidence or for a newspaper story or whatever. And then there's the redaction question. Those are two different issues, right?
One of the recommendations that I agree with in Judge Smolkin's commission report was that the original footage shall always be maintained and a log as to anyone who accessed it and made edits and so forth. So the original data will always be unaltered, so to speak. The answer is that if someone is unsatisfied with what they were given as a result of a PIA request, I suspect the remedy is to seek process in court and let a judge independently review that to make a determination of whether the police officer or department or the state's attorney's office otherwise acted in a reasonable fashion.
Okay. Well, you just answered the second question I had here by email, which had to do with those redactions. And you said before also that a police officer would have to explain why he shut off a camera.
Well, I think that's an internal policy perspective. Go ahead, Chief.
Chief.
As we march into the future, we'll begin to develop standard operating procedure that mandates the camera must be on in this situation. But again, many, many contacts an officer has in daily work has nothing to do with a crime or some disorder event. And certainly we want to, again, strike a policy that allows the officer's discretion in many cases, but also mandates the camera be on in certain situations.
And Judge Smolkin's report actually does touch on that. So think of a police officer who is about to engage in, you know, a potential arrest, that is pulling over a car, you know, activating the lights. I could see a situation where anytime police officer activates lights, that's a mandatory obligation to then turn the camera on.
Okay. Chief Johnson is going to remain in the studio with us here today. So if you have any more questions about this, about body cameras on police officers in Baltimore County, give us a ring, 410-662-8780. I'm going to turn to some other issues with Kevin Kamenetz, who's the Baltimore County Executive. If you have questions for him, again, use the same number and hit us up with an email, midday@wypr.org. What's going on with Governor Larry Hogan and Comptroller Peter Franchot lashing out at you yesterday about air conditioning in Baltimore County schools? Where does this come from?
I guess they need some more air conditioning at the Board of Public Works hearing room because things they seem to be a little irritable.
Well, were you surprised by these comments? Have you heard from the governor about the air conditioning in
No, not
some
from the governor. But Peter Franchot, likes to find issues that give him some attention, and he's certainly entitled to his opinion. But here are the facts. The facts are that when I took office in December of 2010, 80% of our schools were more than 40 years old. 52% of our schools were un-air-conditioned. In less than 5 years, we have reduced that number to 15. So we've gone from 52% un-air-conditioned to 15%. Either air conditioning is turned on today, or starting July 1, we had approved money and contracts are going out to continue that air conditioning.
I didn't follow the math. I'm sorry. You said
52% had no AC 5 years ago.
And how many have no AC now?
With those that are either on air, including the money that we have funded, that is, we've already, you know, we're letting out contracts as we speak today to get the job done. Some may be done before the end of the year. Some may be done by next fall. But that number goes from 52 to 15.
15% without AC.
And
by next fall, within the next year, you'll be down to 15%, you say?
Yes. Okay. And by the end of our program, less than 1% of our schools will be on air conditioned. Some of those are special schools not normal comprehensive schools. So the real issue is this. We have, first of all, I recognize that this is an important issue. You know, it's hot in those classrooms the first 2 weeks of the school year and the last 2 weeks of the school year, and it's something we want to take care of, but it's not our only issue. What we've decided to do is address this in a systemic point of view where we've invested $1.3 billion in a Schools for Our Future program that is addressing not only air conditioning, but modernizing our schools, building new schools, eliminating all current and projected overcrowding with a surplus of 6,000 seats, adding technology to all of our schools, and improving our public safety aspects within our schools. So it's not just one thing. So think about this. I think what I hear the controller saying is that we should just go in and just focus on air conditioning. We should tear out walls, put in air conditioning.
Go buy window units.
Hang on. I didn't even get to the window units yet. Ignore all the pipes and boiler systems. You know, when we start tearing out the walls, we go in and we replace the pipes, the boiler systems, the heating, the, you know, everything, a systemic improvement. We do it all at once because that's the Baltimore County way. We do it in a comprehensive manner that makes sense. What the controller would like us to do is to go out. He literally said yesterday that we should rent a U-Haul and go to Home Depot and buy a bunch of air conditioners and plug them in. Well, first of all, several of our schools are to be torn down. They're so old. So Catonsville Elementary, we're building a brand new school there as we speak. So under Comptroller Franco's theory, even though they will be getting a new school within 1 year that has central air, we should go out and buy air conditioning units and plug them into a 105-year-old building, which does not even have the electricity to handle multiple units in every classroom. So it's just, you know, some people like to lead by grandstanding and others lead by example. And I think our position, our Baltimore County way, is a lead by example. Do what's right thing, fiscally responsible, and get the job done. Don't put a Band-Aid on a situation when we're trying to put a cure to it.
Well, what happened here, the Sun story on this today alludes to Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford attending an event at Delaney High School 2 days ago on Tuesday, where people at the school, he says, inundated him with stories about the heat conditions. And there were some days already this school year where kids were sent home early. So is that what brought this on?
No, this has been.
Has Franco ever? How long? You've been county executive for 5 years?
And for 5 years.
Have you heard from Peter Franco before?
Of course. He's doing this to tweak me, and it's okay. It's what he does. That's why I just talk about the facts, and I stick with what we're getting done here. And frankly, I think our residents understand that. They also know my track record here. We haven't raised the property tax rate in 27 years. We haven't raised the income tax rate in 23 years. We are dealing.
Is that why you don't have enough air conditioning in schools, though? Because that was going to be my question today.
Well, we have committed this $1.3 billion. Guess what? Normally, the state matches us dollar for dollar for school construction and renovation, including air conditioning. We are matching for every state dollar. We are putting two county dollars in. So 70% of that $1.3 billion is coming from Baltimore County taxpayers, and only 30% is coming from the state. So it's not like Baltimore County isn't putting the money up. We are. And the silliness of Comptroller Franco, he keeps talking about room air conditioning. The IAC and the Board of Public Works, which are the two bodies that are responsible for approving every single dollar that Baltimore County spends, and they have, in fact, done that, so there's nothing inappropriate with the way we have been spending money. They approved it ahead of time before it was spent. But importantly, the IAC, the Interagency Committee on School Construction, has clearly stated as a policy that room air conditioners are not eligible for state dollars. So, come on, we're getting the job done, and the rest of the stuff is
okay.
Know,
and
kind
as
of
for
pandering.
Governor Hogan had a piece in this too, saying it was absolutely disgraceful situation.
It's the first I'm hearing Governor Hogan jump in on this. But I was a little disturbed. I saw on TV last night a reporter captured him at the Oriole game, and Governor Hogan said that there's an easy way and a hard way to deal with this with Baltimore County. And the reporter said, well, what's the hard way? He says, well, we're going to cut off state funding for schools for Baltimore County. I thought, wow, what an outrageous statement to sit there and say that.
You remember what channel that was on?
That was on Channel 2.
You've been invited to go to the Board of Public Works and answer questions about this in October. Well, I don't know if you've been formally invited, but the governor says and Franchot says they're going to ask you to come down there and answer this.
Listen,
Dr. Danson.
Look, of course I've had this go around with Comptroller Franchot before the Board of Public Works several times over the past couple years. My answers are still the same. I'm still offering the exact same facts. If they want me to tell everyone once again all these facts, I'm proud of them. I'm happy to talk to them about it. I respect Governor Hogan. He's the governor, and I'm happy to have any dialogue that the governor would like to have with me.
And one last thing on this before we take our break, we can come back and take some questions about it. On your clock for these improvements, is there a time on that clock when every school will have air conditioning?
Our $1.3 billion School for a Future program concludes in 2021. We have asked our voters to double or triple the amount of money we have normally allocated for bond referenda for school renovation and construction. I mean, that's a historic commitment. We're doubling and tripling the amount we've ever spent in the past. And if the state can start matching us dollar for dollar, we can get this done before 2021.
Kevin Kamenetz, the Baltimore County Executive, and Chief Jim Johnson of the Police Department is here in the studio with us as well for the remainder of the hour. If you have a comment or question, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Let's take a couple of calls in the time we have remaining in this hour with Kevin Kamenetz, Baltimore County Executive, and Chief Johnson. Terry in Westminster had a question. I guess we'll direct this to Chief Johnson. Go right ahead, Terry.
Yeah, hi, Dan. Very informative show today. It's a lot more complicated issue than I realized. I've spoken to a number of veteran officers that are friends, and it seems that most of them do not want this. Do you have a feel for the FOP organizations, if they're going to support reluctantly or, I'm interested in that aspect.
Well, I believe the FOP has spoken. Obviously, their statements are in the Sun paper today. And this morning I met with the FOP. I find them to be cooperative in looking at this particular tool, but they feel that we should wait and look at other departments. That's not the Baltimore County way. We're a very progressive agency. We're on the cutting edge. And certainly we believe that we can develop policies and procedures that use the tool effectively, but also preserves officer autonomy to do their work.
The FOP Lodge 4 in Baltimore County said, while body cameras may be an appropriate and much-needed tool in some police agencies, there have been no significant incidents or systematic problems within the department resulting in a call from the community for body cameras.
Fair statement, and we want to make sure that we maintain that same record, and that's why body cameras are important.
You respect the governor. You say you would be happy to have that dialogue about air conditioning. But are you going to go to Annapolis and talk to them about this?
Depends what he's serving for lunch.
Okay. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Hannah in Annesley, Baltimore County, had a question for Kevin Kamenetz. Hi.
Oh, hi. My comment would be, I just think it would be instructive to know how much in state funding went to counties that did not go for the governor.
Well, good question. I don't think there's a big enough track record yet after just one General Assembly session. I will tell you, though, that the amount we got in Baltimore County this past year was less than the average we got from Governor O'Malley over the last 4 years. In fact, Governor O'Malley 2 years ago, in response to my specific request to him, put aside a special fund for schools in our circumstance, which is aging infrastructure and rising enrollment, which is the twin dilemma we have in Baltimore County. And as a result, we were actually able to get even more money that is still part of that 30% that they gave us, but that we could attack the issue that much faster. I certainly call on Governor Hogan to do the same thing. That is, if he thinks we need to speed up the pace, give us more money as far as his fair share. I will tell you, though, that the track record of dispersing money to jurisdictions that seem to have supported him in the last election is probably a fair one if you look at the transportation money. So the governor made the decision, again, in his prerogative to cancel the red line, that is his prerogative. I kind of felt like he should have had a plan B or an alternative, or, you know, just saying no is not a transportation solution. We're still stuck in traffic. But what I thought was questionable was that he took all of the money that was devoted to mass transit for Baltimore City and Baltimore County. He took 99% of that money and dispersed it to all of the rural counties. I thought that was not well thought, for some dubious projects
of dubious value. In Baltimore County got, I think, $1 million out of this, right?
Yeah, just peanuts. And didn't even ask us what we would like to spend the money on.
Before I leave that subject, on school funding, there was the $68 million that the governor refused to release that comes out of the formula for school aid to
GCEI, Geographical Cost of Education Index.
Thank you very much for that. And so there's $68 million there. Part of that was for Baltimore City. It was for several jurisdictions, including yours. So what piece of that would have been Baltimore County's? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I want to think 24 million range. I can't remember that number, but it was significant to us.
It was even more
significant to Prince George's and Montgomery counties, as well as Baltimore City. He's talking about education and taking care of our kids, and he used the word disgraceful. Quite frankly, one could argue that he cut the money, the General Assembly found it and restored it, and he petulantly refuses to distribute it. It's just sitting in the bank account there. One could argue that might be disgraceful.
I have two questions for you that regard redevelopment and development in Baltimore County. That I wanted to ask you about. I'm always curious about Sparrows Point. I keep looking at the map, and Sparrows Point, I've driven down there to look at that area that used to, you know, take up, used to be the, one of the world's largest factory complexes, Bethlehem Steel.
You are a great student of history, Dan. And, of course, the Sparrows Point Peninsula has a venerable history of steel making for 125 years. And at its heyday in the 50s, Bethlehem Steel had 30,000 direct jobs plus a lot of indirect jobs associated with it. It supported generations of families with well-paying jobs. When RG Steel pulled the plug a couple years ago, they had but just 2,000 jobs. So what I tried to do immediately, actually before RG, I kind of saw the handwriting on the wall there, I tried to come up with a game plan to determine what would be the next generation of jobs for Sparrows Point. And the real key was the asset of the land itself, which is 3,100 acres of land that's already zoned industrial in nature. It has deep water port access, plus access to two interstate highways and two rail lines. So we developed a vision that would allow for expansion of the port to Sparrows Point. The port is the economic engine of the state right now. They're busting at the seams, and that's a logical expansion point for either a public or a private port. And related to that are logistics and transportation. What do you do with the stuff that you're about to export? What do you do with the stuff you're about to import, that you have imported? Where does it go? Can there be light assembly either before or after importing that would take place at Sparrows Point? And obviously, the location there is good for other types of distribution facilities. So I did have a meeting last week with the new CEO of Sparrows Point Terminal, Michael Moore. And he and I share the same vision of where we think Sparrows Point should go, which I'm delighted. They are interested in achieving the highest and best use there that's going to create the most jobs. I predicted a hope that we could restore 10,000 jobs there within a fairly short period of time. After my meeting with Mr. Moore last week, I am extremely confident that we will have 10,000 good-paying jobs there within the next 10 years. And importantly, we will also have another 10,000 temporary construction jobs that can that will handle the different phases of the project as well. So that's really solid progress and really a bright future for an area that has fallen in hard times.
Well, thank you for that. And closer to where we are today, just the north of Baltimore, Towson, there's redevelopment plans in Towson, some underway already. Residents want to see more open space and parks in Towson. My question has to do with affordable housing. There's a big need here. There's been several reports out in the last year about the need for more affordable housing in Baltimore City, well, all around the metropolitan area. And it was addressed by the Opportunity Collaborative, too, part of the Metropolitan Council, which you chair. So I wonder, is that being addressed in Baltimore County? Is it, will we see it addressed in Towson?
Yes and yes. We have had $1 billion of private investment committed to downtown Towson over the last 5 years. And for me, it's a logical opportunity to expand our tax base. And if we expand our tax base, we can maintain our stable tax structure. And it's inside the Beltway. It's the county seat. It's home to two universities and three hospitals. It's a great quality of life there. As part of the second part is that we have set aside a development fund that is last year that was already approved by the county council that will allow a developer in what we call non-impacted areas, that is those where there are not concentrations of poor people and minorities, to allow opportunities for affordable housing. One of the major projects that is currently under development in Towson, in downtown Towson, that I know the developers are considering making application to the county to have a set aside for affordable housing in one of these high-rise projects. They would access our money, in essence, to buy down the cost of that unit for rental. We're very proud of that. We think that the unrest that took place in the city was a great opportunity for us not only to examine relations between police and the community in Baltimore County, but also an opportunity to figure out how do we address the cycle of unemployment and economic despair that is taking place in the city and allow people to grow, those who want to succeed, and give them that opportunity to.
So the money is there for developers willing to take it. And it sounds like the county council has supported you on this.
They approved our budget last year, and it's a $10 million fund of which we said we would put in. We start with $3 million a year.
And how is that done? I'm just curious. Is that tax credit or is that subsidy for the developers?
It's not a tax credit. It's a subsidy. So basically, but it's a negotiable item. It's $30 million, of which we jump-started with $10 million.
It's $30 million.
It's a 30. Sorry.
Aren't you glad you have an aide de camp like that?
I'm glad I can
help you out with
fingers.
With the numbers.
That's good.
Very good.
I thought he was pointing one finger at me. I wasn't sure what I just did wrong. But.
Okay, so you're gonna leave here today and make an announcement to the broader press about
2 o'clock
body cameras.
Yes.
Okay, and we think maybe a year from now we'll see them, or sooner than that. What is your prediction on when we'll finally start to see
July some? 1.
You think by July 1 you'll be able to deploy some?
No, that's our plan. That's what we are going to do.
Okay, and that means all officers that you...
Not every single officer.
No, the ones that you think should have them will
well,
have...
Well, no, we are going to phase it in every single precinct, so that we're not picking out one area. There will be officers in every single precinct beginning July 1 who will wear the cameras, and of course that ultimately will be expanded by the following July to all appropriate personnel. This is not a pilot. This is a commitment, a program, and it's well thought out as to how we're going to do it, how we're going to pay for it. We're going to get it done.
Thank you very much, and thanks for being here again today. Chief Johnson, too. Jim Johnson, thank you for being here. And Kevin Kamenetz, Baltimore County Executive, always a pleasure to have you on the Midday Show. Thank you.
It's always fun, Dan. Thanks.
We'll take a break here, and we have another hour of Midday ahead. It's Constitution Day, a look at the Freddie Gray case, policing, law enforcement, and the Constitution. Before we get to that, a little bit of lunch from Eddie's of Roland Park, offering gourmet sandwiches, soups, salads, and desserts at its two stores, one on Roland Avenue and one on North Charles Street. with personal shopping, catering, gift baskets available at eddiesofrolandpark.com.